Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, here we go with another podcast talking into relationships, and it's going to go really deep into self-work with Stefanos Sifandos. So Stefanos is a trained educator and relationship expert with a background in behavioral science. He is passionate about leading people closer to their highest potential. He helps men and women escape negative patterns and cultivate a positive sense of self, as well as restructuring and reframing their relationships with themselves and their loved ones. Seriously, there are so many incredible nuggets in this podcast on how to start actually getting to that true self and integrating that into real life. If you go to his Instagram handle, Stefanos Sifandos, that'll be down in the show notes, so you can just click into it. You'll immediately see how dedicated this man is to helping facilitate others' paths to overcoming some of their shadow truths and traumas. He is a co-founder of Elementum Coaching Institute as well, which he talks about a little bit at the end of the podcast. So let's go. Steph, thanks so much for being here today. I'm so excited to dive in with you because I see your stuff all the time on Instagram, and it's stuff that I resonate so much with. And I think you just hit on so many points that really hit to the core of people, because it's the stuff about relationships, about sexuality, about unions and marriage that people just don't talk about a lot. So Jen and I are just super excited to jump in on a lot of that.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here as well.
So what brought you into really working with relationships? And, you know, and I know that you and Christine, how long have you been married now?
Oh, what are we in, 21? Jeez, 3 years.
Nearly 3 years. Put you on the spot for that one. 3 years,
yeah. Are you losing track already?
No, more than 3 years. Jeez.
Amazing. But so some people might say that's pretty early on, right? So what brought you into working with relationships, and how long have you been doing this?
Yeah, so I've been... you know, immersed in understanding. I think it's firstly, let me just be really clear. For me, it's a lifelong process and a lifelong journey, just like I think humaning is, right? Like, yeah. Being humans, discovering and unpacking our potential, reaching new layers of understanding and connection. But that's a lifelong process. It doesn't stop. From my perspective, it doesn't mean that we constantly have to be in our work and in the darkness or in the shadow or in the pain consistently, not at all. But it does mean that we're just constantly evolving and learning more about who we are in the world. And I think that's a really beautiful thing, actually. So for me, you know, I've been in the, call it, personal transformation or personal development space, not only as a student but as a teacher, for quite some time, technically since I was 18 years of age. And I'm 39 now, I'm 40 next year. So I've been in this space quite, you know, a few years. However, I really wasn't integrated, and I was so scattered in my approach, not only in how I taught, but how I thought, but the lives that I was living a double life. Like, I was preaching or speaking to amazing concepts, but I wasn't living them. Mm. And I was speaking to integrity and honesty and truth as values that should be played out in relationship. I was speaking to, you know, being transparent with those that you care about, but I wasn't being transparent with the people that I cared about and the people that really cared about me. And I hid, and I was in shame and guilt and lies. And it was very painful for me because I wasn't looking at my trauma in the way that I really needed to. I was only just scraping the surface or touching it, but whenever it got too intense, I would just pull myself away. And so it wasn't until about 8 years ago that I really started to look at that at a deeper level. And so my relationship to relationships, firstly, predominantly my relationship to myself and all parts of me, my shame, my pain, my trauma, my guilt, my past, my future, my vision, like, all of that had to shift. And as that started to shift and I really started to walk my talk and I really started to show up in a healthier way, in a more embodied, integrated way, and that started becoming reflected back to me by strangers, people that would pick up that presence. And then also people that knew me and had been in my world since I was a teenager, and you know, family and friends that had seen some pretty big changes, that's when I really started orientating myself deeper to this work, because I was doing it on myself, for myself, in a way that I'd never done it before. And so what orientated me, what pulled me towards this work, was my own pain, my own suffering, and my own despair, and really just messing up in relationship over and over again. And not only understanding that, but healing that part of me and healing those parts of me. And so that 8 year ago mark really started the deeper catalyst for me to explore myself in ways I'd never before, but also to serve and to be of service and to create and ideate in ways that I never had before either.
I think, just in what you said right there, so many powerful tidbits that we definitely want to dissect more into. I mean, a lot about the integration, a lot about, even discovering those initial shadow truths and traumas and inner children.
Well, and I just got to say that takes so much humility as well as a human to be able to say, listen, this is what I'm saying and I know how to preach it, I know how to teach it, but I'm not actually living it. And I think when we all kind of step back and look at what am I saying, who am I saying it to, and am I actually being in that? Like, that's massive. And being able to get through the shame of that is massive. So Can I just ask, like, what made you actually start to create that shift that said, this is no longer okay? It's no longer okay for me to just talk about this, but not actually be it.
Yeah, from an existential meta perspective, it was chaos and turmoil and an immersion, a plummeting into the shadow. And from a more pragmatic, logistical place, I was in a relationship, an intimate romantic partnership, whom I deeply cared for, this woman, and she deeply cared for me. And we'd been together for about 3.5-4 years, and I wasn't behaving in integrity in that relationship. There was infidelity and there was cheating and there was dishonesty and masks worn and just shadow behavior and lies and all of that. And that came to a head. She found out and she discovered my behavior outside of the relationship that wasn't in agreement. We didn't have agreements around that behavior and that way of being. And it really brought up a lot of shame to the surface that was undealt with from my past, and pain and trauma. And my nervous system had such a reaction. It was like a come to Jesus kind of moment. You know, sometimes you'll hear drug addicts have a really bad hit and it's like something possessed them, or that the experience was so intense, they just quit cold turkey there and then, and they'll never ever go back. It's like a really bad trip. And it was almost that. And I could never look at myself in the same way again. I could never continue the behavior that I was continuing and being that person anymore, because I started to see all the holes in my life. I started to see all the gaps where I wasn't being truthful. I wasn't being honest. I was really suffering deeply. I was blaming everyone and everything, but I wasn't taking responsibility. Like, even my businesses that were failing, I would say, well, the market's not right, or I don't have enough money to, I don't know the right people. But I was never really taking responsibility. It was always something else. And so it was someone else. And so I just couldn't do that anymore. And that began the journey of I literally just stopped doing what I was doing. I stopped working. I gave my businesses up. I went into massive debt. I went inward. I cut a lot of friendships out of my life. They didn't do anything wrong. They just weren't conducive. It was really hard because they weren't conducive just to the values that I was bringing into my life and remembering again of who I really was. And it was very difficult to be in a very similar environment or the same environment and be completely different.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of identity loss and change that was going through. And I sought help. I mean, I sought counselors and psychologists and shamans and energy healers and spiritual guides. And I spent a lot of time in solitude and in nature. And I really spent a great deal of time and space in my own time and space. And that was very healing as well, but not without it being confronting. Like, it was all very freeing and all amazing, but not without having my face and genitals, my sexual self, just dragged across rock bottom multiple times. Like, that's what it felt like, and for me, my journey, that needed to happen in order to give me the context, perspective, reference point, and grace that I needed, although it wasn't very graceful at the time, to be able to transition from an older version of self and selves into a newer version of self.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that, you know, redefining of self, it's like, it's easy to say, but the process that you just outlined and kind of losing that community that you were surrounded by for so long that you felt like were your friends and needing to remove yourself from that environment that was comfortable yet provided a lot of those excuses and those abilities to hide behind things and blame other things to be able to be vulnerable and find your naked self and, you know, find that reference point. I think that's something that's so hard, especially, you know, in a place of addiction, regardless of what the behavior is. Yeah. You know, we're addicted to a certain lifestyle and not being able to get out of that because we have all of these shields and guards up to protect that inner self, that true self that we're not allowing to be seen. It's a really interesting concept once you start taking those shields down and how your body just will viscerally respond. You brought up one thing about, you know, that you kind of went through with infidelity and cheating. And I just want to talk about that in general. Like, where do you think that comes from in relationships, and why are people, you know, seeking out other partners when they're in a committed relationship versus just getting out of the relationship and pursuing new partners or things like that? Where do you think that kind of behavior comes from?
I think it comes from many different places. It's not just one place within us. I'll speak for myself because I'm also representative of others and other reasons or other people engaged in these reasons, but it's not the only reason. So for me, I used sex compulsion, sex addiction, prostitution, being with many different women, not only as an ego boost, because a lot of it was done in the shadows, right? But the ego boost was part of it for myself and for maybe my peers. But it did a few things for me. It gave me a sense of relief because for me, it defined me being quote-unquote free. And freedom was a big wounding for me because of my childhood and the constriction that I experienced, right? Ultimately, if we really strip all of this back, why we behave how we behave is because of patterns, coping strategies that we've cultivated and developed during our formative years that have laid down foundations in our behavioral, neurological, physiological, psychological ways of being. Right, that's the sort of macro understanding. For me, it was variety and being with many different women and having those high peak experiences. It gave me a sense of relief and freedom, literally like I wasn't being annihilated. And I had that reprieve in my nervous system because freedom was a big wounding for me. So was commitment because of the upbringing that I had, how I viewed my parents, the violence that I was exposed to, the volatility between them. So I couldn't trust intimacy. I couldn't trust romance. And so I was fooled to believe that the peak experience of novelty and variety, which is a beautiful and real thing, but I was fooled to believe that that is love and that is intimacy. So the more of that I had, the more intimacy and closeness and I felt, the more seen I felt.
Wow.
Even paying women to be intimate was something that gave me a sense of control in terms of, oh, the, you know, again, a misbelief, or this person must really care for me because they're being affectionate. But it was all transactional and it was all me compensating for the immense pain that I was avoiding. So I needed more pleasure. See, the greater our pain, the greater the compensation for pleasure needs to be. And the more frequent it needs to be because we get accustomed to it, number one, physiologically and psychologically. And number two, not only do we get accustomed to it, but we believe that we need more of it and we're on the right path with it. So for me, that was part of it. Now, the other part was I lacked self-confidence in some areas of my life, right? It wasn't confidence that I lacked. It was self-worth that I lacked, that I masked with false bravado, that I masked with highlighting my achievements in life, whether they were physical or monetary achievements or status or whatever it may be, you know, accomplishments in business and so forth, which I lied even a little bit about that. Not a lot, but a little bit about that because I wasn't where I really wanted to be. I was, and again, what drove me was this unconscious seeking of approval from my father that I never got as a child. And couple that with I got abuse from him, and couple that with I also received love from him. So it was very confusing for me. So I had what is called a disorganized attachment style. growing up and for much of my life. And so the other part was I had such low self-worth that I couldn't be honest in my relationships because I was also scared of the judgment. I was also scared of the shame that would be inflicted upon me because as a kid, when I was honest, guess what happened? I was judged. I was shamed. It never went really well. So I hid. So I developed a pattern of hiding in my life, right? And so that pattern transcended and played out in my relationships as well. Then, let me keep going. Some other reasons. Society sees men who do that, not necessarily as good, noble men, but it's not like such a big deal. Like, that's a warped perception. Dishonesty and infidelity, saying that's not a big deal, it's okay or it's acceptable, that's a warped perception of healthy relating. And that's not how we healthily relate. But our society at some level, and there's nuances in this, of course, accepts that expression of men being men. And not to say that women don't cheat. Absolutely they do. Like, humans cheat. And there are evolutionary and biological reasons for that. I'm not going to get into that too much. But that's also a real thing as well, right? And these are part of what we call psychological sexual mating strategies in both men and women. They differ. And we have to compete to get what we want, right, with each other. Yeah, and again, that's a very complex thing. And that's millions of years old. And it's evolved over time. But there's that. But let me go back to what I was saying a second ago. So it was also accepted in my peer groups. Like, that's what we did. Like, we would, if we were in relationship, sure, we would cheat. It wasn't a big deal. That didn't make it right. And it compounded a lot of guilt and a lot of shame in me personally. And so over years, I had to keep running and hiding to get away from that guilt and shame. And what? I needed more pleasure. So drugs weren't my thing. I would go to alcohol, I would go to exercise, I would go to food, I would go to sex. Some people mark it in different ways, right? But that's how I did it.
I mean, and that is the perfect cycle that you just depicted so brilliantly, is having that pain and finding that pleasure to be able to cover it up rather than be able to actually dissect it and go into it. And I feel like that is the root of the problem in so many different areas. It doesn't have to just be infidelity or cheating. It doesn't even have to be relationship, but relationship itself. You cover things up and you lie to yourself about things. And then you take that into the relationship. I mean, so how does someone who, and I, you know, because this is something that I've heard all growing up, I feel like, is like, I want my freedom. You know, it's hard to commit because I want my freedom. So how does especially a man start to battle that when they think, well, freedom doesn't mean relationship. Freedom doesn't mean intimacy. If I create that with someone, then I take away my freedom. So what does freedom actually mean in relationship?
Freedom means not being attached. Freedom means not being fearful of the decisions that we make. Freedom means a deeper acceptance of self. Freedom means worthiness that is not only expressed in mind, but is expressed in action and heart and interaction with another. Freedom means being able to be oneself. And if judgment comes or shame comes towards us, we can still hold in our true self. Freedom means making our own sovereign decisions, being discerning with who we are, who we spend our time with. Freedom means so many different things. I'm just giving you some examples in relationship.
I love it.
Freedom means vulnerability, right? And not being attached to how the other person is going to respond to our truth / vulnerability / authentic expression. Because when we are attached, which is the first thing that I said, is not attached, right? When we are attached to how someone else sees us and we then begin to behave in certain ways, based on how we think we want them to see us or how we think we need to be or how we feel we need them to receive us, we contort ourselves. We become codependent. We people please. We manipulate. We control. That's not freedom. Now we're being dictated to by constriction in the nervous system, restriction in our physiology, in our psychology. We're now being dictated to by fear, and fear is running us. And that's how I was for so long. And I did everything to avoid fear and to avoid feeling fear and being in that place. And then, you know, the paradox is, well, I'm not a man if I'm not you know, scared. So I would do things that would scare me, such as seek adrenaline dumps, you know, extreme sports, you know, climb high mountains, whatever it may be, like to prove to myself that I'm tough still. And so, you know, because we it's a human condition, like we need to experience fear and we need to experience joy. But our sources of these things really impact and influence the health of our entire constitution.
Well, I was just saying, like, how do we even start to address where we are right now? You know, it's like there's so many layers to us as individuals, and then we pair that with a partner, and we're expected not to get attached. We're expected not to fall into certain patterns that we've learned from what we saw growing up. So where does someone even start to identify where they are?
So the first thing that I often go to, because the truth of it is that we struggle as human beings to see the forest through the trees. We live with ourselves 24/7. I'll give you an example. You both know Christine, my wife. You know, she's pregnant at the moment. We're very grateful, of course. And often she'll come to me like every day, is my belly getting bigger? Is my belly getting bigger? And she's just being cute, right? But she's being serious because she almost can't see it because she lives with herself 24/7. Like, she knows it's bigger. She can feel it. But it's like, oh, has it grown since last week, or has it grown since, you know, like a few days ago? And she's just, and we just, we're it's a new novel thing for us. So it's all very exciting, but also very new, right? But you can see through that point there, she lives with herself 24/7. She's not going to notice the changes, even over a week. But we're like that. We struggle to see our own selves fully, right? And so what's really important is that we have honest, trusted, respected, revered reflections in our lives. What does that look like? Could look like a counselor. Could look like a coach or a psychologist. Could look like a friends group that where you meet, or a men's group or a women's group, or co-ed group, or whatever it may be. You meet once a month and you share about what's happening in your lives, and you ask for honest feedback. Could be going to a family member and asking them pertinent questions about who they think you are in the world. Doesn't mean you have to take their perspective for gospel, but it does mean that you have an opportunity to see parts of you that you can't see. That's what a great coach does. A great coach will shine lights, and a great friend, right, will shine lights on the dark parts of you that you can't see to illuminate them. To illuminate them, not to shame them or to judge you, but to bring love, to apply compassion, acceptance to those parts that you can't see, to apply healing, not that they're going to do the healing for you, that you will do the healing for yourself, but to apply context and wisdom and insight. And that's how we grow. We have more information, whether it's in a more visceral, embodied way, or whether it's in an intellectual way or an emotional way. We have more information. We can act on that. Awareness is only part of the puzzle, so to speak, or the solution. It's a part of the process. If, you know, if all we needed was awareness, then the world would be a very different place for the quote-unquote better, right? But we need more than awareness, but awareness is a great starting point. We often get confused with awareness, though, because awareness is tricksy. Like in Lord of the Rings, the Gollum is tricksy, tricksy, tricksy. Like, that's what awareness is. It's tricksy. It's a trickster, because it gives you a false sense of confidence. Like, oh, because I'm so aware of it, therefore I've healed it or moved past it. Therefore I've transformed. Therefore I'm better than I was. I'm greater than I was. I'm grown. Not necessarily, not without continuous, consistent, embodied action. And that's a deeper process. So we need people in our lives that help us reflect who we are and what we cannot see, to help us begin that process. And simultaneously, I will say, spending ample time in solitude, in stillness, in silence with yourself, getting to know yourself at deeper levels, asking yourself powerful questions, because powerful questions tend to lead to powerful outcomes and powerful insights and realizations. And so asking yourself those questions that take you to the edge, you can feel that in your body. You're like, what do I really need to learn right now? What am I doing that I really could be doing that would better my life? What are the patterns that continue to play out that are giving me more of what I don't want? What's my true deepest vision for myself? What is the greatest pain that I'm feeling right now? What is the greatest fear that I'm not facing right now? These are powerful questions, right? And so if we can be honest with ourselves, honest with each other, we can grow in a deeper way.
And so in that, you bring up, you know, once we find this honesty with ourselves and are able to have some awareness, like no, that's not the end of the road. It takes this consistent embodied action that you brought up. And I think that starts to get towards this integrating of, you know, this awareness that we have. And so can you bring up an example of how someone can start to approach, okay, I'm aware that I need to make this change or that I need to do this in order to be true to myself. How do I start going about installing this consistent embodied action in my life?
Our environment plays a massive role in how we see life and see ourselves. And our environment will trigger, right? It will continue to trigger behavior. And so sometimes having a change of environment can be deeply empowering. And that could be moving city, moving house, changing peer groups, changing jobs, doing something different with your life, like taking yourself on that path that you really want to take. So it could be just going on a holiday, disappearing into nature for a week or a month or 6 months, depending on what your circumstances allow, right? Like it's that level of commitment to change. Environment can be really, really cool for that. So changing and shifting your environment can be deeply empowering.
That's huge. And I love what you said about how powerful questions can create powerful outcomes. I think that itself is so powerful. And personally, I found that when I start just writing things down on paper, actually, rather than just thinking about them, but actually writing, it allows for things to come to the surface that I might not even have thought about, or I might not be, you know, fully aware of until I actually start putting it down. And then I can start saying, okay, where's my action point? How can I put that into action? And it is a continual practice. Like it is nonstop. Of what we do is how we be. Like we have to do the things. Like I absolutely love this conversation. Now, how do we start to put that into a healthy relationship with another person? And what even defines a healthy relationship?
Oh, there are many things that define a healthy relationship, and how we put that into a relationship with another person is through agreements and boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. But in order to put healthy agreements in place and have those very honest, open conversations with those that we care about, we have to be very honest with ourselves, right? Like in order to have agreements about what your desires are, what you want, what your likes and dislikes are, how you want to disagree in relationship, like in order to have those agreements put forward in relationship, you have to trust yourself, back yourself, know yourself, love yourself, and you have to be committed to the relationship. That's really, really important as well, is you have to be all in on that relationship. And that doesn't mean that, oh, I'm going to spend the next 100 years with this person. I mean, that could be it, but it's more so that you're really present to the relationship and you realize that, you know, the more honest and present you can be in this relationship, the more that you will get from it. And that may sound selfish, but it's enlightened self-interest, right? Because you know that the more that you can get from it, you can give back to the relationship in a more empowered way, in an amplified way. And the context for that is that the other person shares that similar intention. So you have agreements in how you want to be in the relationship. And then you're boundaried in the relationship as well. So if you're yelling at me, that's a boundary for me. That's not how we argue. That's not how we disagree. That's not how we do life together. So there has to be a, hey, that's a no for me. And in order to be boundary, though, you have to be self-confident, or authentically, genuinely self-confident. You have to carry self-worth for you to be able to express that. And so ipso facto, we come back to working on yourself, constantly being a work in progress on yourself. That's what it's about.
So within this, you know, we talk about having these open, honest conversations with your partner, and say you're getting to the point where you're wanting to start to do that, but you're met with a lot of resistance and you are noticing that your partner's not wanting to go into these conversations, not wanting to have this openness. I'm sure you get people reaching out to you all the time saying, oh, if only my husband, partner, boyfriend, whoever would talk to you, like they just need to be able to hear some of this stuff, but they might not be open to it. What if somebody runs into that wall?
Well, again, knowing yourself and knowing what your non-negotiables are, because if one of your non-negotiables in a relationship is growth and, you know, being really, really open to oneself and wanting to be in a relationship where there is a consideration and openness, then you have to have a look at the dynamic of the relationship and choose whether this relationship's for you. Now, just because someone may disagree with you or may not be open to something that you're wanting them to be open to. It doesn't mean that in general they're not an open person, they don't value growth. It could just be this doesn't align for them. So understanding why it doesn't align for them, is it a childhood trauma? Is it a trigger? Is it too early for them? Is it beyond where they're at the moment within their own level of consciousness? That's an individual choice that an individual has to make, like in terms of what to do. But getting curious about why that's happening is a great starting point, because now in curiosity, you're automatically activated in a parasympathetic nervous system response, right? So you're automatically, you know, safer in your constitution, so to speak. And you automatically, you're more in a ventral vagal parasympathetic nervous system response, which means your body's calmer. Your social engagement is online. You're curious. You're not scared. You're not retracted. You're not in fight or flight. So getting curious about where someone's at, where your partner's at, can be really healing for them as well. And actually, maybe by default, get them on board with what you're wanting to share or what you're wanting them to engage in. But also remember, and being kind and compassionate about this, that it may not be for them. And that's okay, but are you okay with that? Are you okay with your partner not following that same path? Can you have your own individual path and still coexist and thrive together? Not just cohabitate or survive, but thrive together. Again, that's an individual choice. But if you start with curiosity, you're not now coming from defensiveness. You're not coming now from protection and aggression. That's a way more empowered, inviting place to come from. That's, if anything, going to enroll your partner into at least seeing what you're seeing and having them consider it from a deeper vantage point.
Oh my goodness. That's everything. I mean, that's huge. If you're, you know, approaching someone because they're not doing it, or you're angry or combative, you're reacting, like you said, like, from the opposite, from a sympathetic place. Who's going to want to respond from a sympathetic place? No one's going to want to get on board. But if you're coming with curiosity and compassion and openness, like, that is such a calmer place that someone can possibly meet, or at least continue to have open conversation. And I think, you know, being able, like you said from the beginning, like having that self-awareness, having that ability to create that environment, like that's a very powerful place. Do you guys work with people, you know, in relationship with each other, or do you recommend first, like, let's work on you, as see where you're at and see where your growth might need to be before we can even start pulling in a partner?
Yeah, it's a both and scenario. It depends on the individuals. It depends on where they're at. It depends on their level of willingness, you know, how much inner work they've done, awareness they have around themselves. You know, it depends on the dynamic and nature of the relationship, their historical context in so many different ways individually, you know, what's their upbringing like, and their belief systems, and their coping strategies, and so many factors lean into that decision. But it can be a both and. Sometimes we have to go, you know what, there's no point in working in this relationship right now until both of you are individually at a place where you can deal with what's happening, right? And sometimes it's like, you guys actually are probably going to do better in the relationship, like healing in the relationship. And like a great example of that is an avoidant attachment style. Like, an avoidant attachment style will generally heal best in relationship, right? A secure, an insecure attachment style is probably going to heal best outside of relationships. So, not making the relationship the priority, right? I'm just giving you two super simple examples.
Yeah.
That are somewhat complex as well, can be. But, you know, attachment theory is something that many people know about. You know, the book Attached did really well, and it expressed that in such a great way. But it's one of the ways that we understand human behavior, right, through attachment theory. And so, you know, it really depends on the individuals and their trauma, their wounding, their background, their history, and, you know, their intentions, and so much of what's going on in their lives now.
Can you briefly explain what some of the attachment theories are? And is there an easy way for you to kind of explain that to people who might be listening?
Yes, definitely. And to be honest, if you scoured the internet, like, there's so much there. But let's go into a little bit of attachment theory anyway, just for the sake of it, right? So I mentioned the book Attached, right? And so that's a super cool book in just understanding how attachment theory is formed. Generally, attachment theory is formed from 0 to, call it 18 months, maybe 2 years at the most, but it's formed at a very young age. You've got anxious attachment. So secure attachment style is the healthiest attachment style, right? Then you've got avoidant, which is one I just explained. So you've got, well, actually, let me go. So you've got dismissive avoidant. So here you feel isolated. There's a level of ambiguity that you, and ambivalence that you experience. You're emotionally distant. You know, you when something's difficult, boom, you're out. Like, you don't want anything to do with it. You're not interested, right? There's secure attachment style, which of course is the ideal for all of us. It means that as a child, you were nurtured in a way that was healthy. Your needs were met. You could trust your environment. You know, when you called for help, you were met in a healthy way, in a timely way. You know, you carry confidence. There's reciprocity in your interaction. There's not reactiveness. There's resilience. Like, it's that type of thing, right? Then there's anxious attachment style. This also can be known as anxious preoccupied. Again, here you can be highly emotional. You have like an emotional hunger. Like, you know, enough's there. You're very codependent. You experience a lot of turbulence growing up. There's lack of nurturing that you experience. There's a fantasy bond that you share as well within your relationship. So there's high levels of codependence. You know, then there's this disorganized attachment style, which can also be called, I'm pretty sure, fearful avoidant, if I'm not mistaken. But again, this is where you experience love, but you also experience turmoil and terror. The same source of your safety was the same source of your terror. So you had a dramatic, unpredictable, ambivalent environment, volatile environments, a lot of internal conflicts. And so essentially they're the attachment styles. Now, they then form who we become as adults, right? Now, the beautiful thing is that we can, quote unquote, heal, or we can move from wherever we are into a healthy attachment, into a secure attachment style. And it requires work, of course, but it's very possible to do. And that's a beautiful place to be, to know that we're not fixed.
Yeah.
Like we're not stuck in our attachment styles. Does that answer your question?
Oh yeah.
Oh, absolutely. No, I think that was great. And like you said, I think it's beautiful to have the empowerment of just knowing that as humans, as human beings, we have this plasticity of our physiology and our system to always change that, you know, and to what degree and how much. It depends on how long we've been where we're at and how hard and consistent we work at making some different changes. I kind of want to continue along the relationship route, because I know in your work you talk a lot about the sacred union, and you, I feel like you use that term almost in synonym or in replacement of the word marriage. And I'm wondering if you can explain a little bit what you mean when you say sacred union, and is that similar to a marriage? How would those two relate?
It's a great question. If I was to use the word union, that would be synonymous with marriage. For me, if I was to say sacred marriage and sacred union, then that would be synonymous for me personally. Mm. Right. So I appreciate the clarification there as well. So for me, sacred union is, when anyone ever asks me, you know, what's your definition of sacred union, I swear I give an 80% different answer. That's sort of how it is, right?
Like, what is it today?
it's all the things that we've spoken about.
Yeah.
Like, today, really, you know, it's being willing to do the work together. It's realizing that your role in the relationship is not just affecting your partner, but it's affecting your own growth and your journey. It's affecting all the people that come into contact with you. It's saying that I'm in this relationship because I'm going to ask these key questions. I'm going to ask, how is me being in this relationship and the way that I show up, how does that affect me? How does that affect my partner? How does that affect our relationship? And how does that affect the world? Now, there's this bigger picture. But it's simultaneously a deep, deep connection to self as well, right? Like, it's not just, oh, I'm here in this relationship because this relationship makes the world a better place. Yes. And does it make your internal home a better place? Like, the internal home within your heart, within your own being. Does it make you a better place? Like, what are you learning and how are you learning and growing from this relationship? Are you just spinning wheels? Like, to me, sacred union is being willing to go to uncomfortable places, to the hard places that you haven't been able to visit before because of your fears. Being in sacred union means supporting each other through different stages of life, being brutally honest, being very deliberate with whatever choices and agreements you make in relationship. Like that there could be a definition of sacred union. Mm-hmm. I am deliberate in the choices and the agreements that I make within the context of this relationship. Because I don't think most people do that in relationship. I know I never did. There were times that I tried, but it was all lip service. Like it wasn't genuine and authentic. And sacred union is healing. It's a healing container for all of our past pain, for all of our past worries, for all of our past patterns. For me, sacred union is recognizing that you are coming together as a couple, or you know, as a throuple, whatever your dynamic is, it's irrelevant. Generally speaking, it's going to be a coupledom, an intimate romantic partnership of coupledom. But it's coming together saying that I know that you've got stuff in you that is going to help me heal, and I've got stuff in me that is going to help you heal, and together we can heal each other and in turn heal the planet. Like that's really what it's also about. It's the relationship itself is its own entity. It has its own auric field. It has its own entelechy. Has its own deliberate sense of being in the world. Like it's its own living, breathing entity. That to me is also sacred union. Sacred union itself is a relationship outside of just those two individuals. And so that's how I feel like answering it today.
No, I love that. And I think that's what like Dom and I say all the time too, when we meet two incredible humans that are together, have partnership, marriage, and they don't want kids, obviously always their choice. However, we always say, oh, but you can make this world so much better by having these humans that go out and can, you know, just make the world better. And I think it's a huge responsibility. And I think that's why some people might be resistant to that idea of my relationship isn't just within this household, but it is reflective of what's happening at large. And that's huge. That's a lot to take in.
Totally.
Well, do you relate that as well to sacred sexuality? Is that a similar context in the way that?
Yeah, sacred sexuality is even a layer deeper because of the vulnerability and the rawness and the openness that can sometimes be shared, and the wounding around sexuality, not only at a collective societal level, but at an individual level through abuse and shame, body shame as an example, you know, sexual abuse, just so much there. Yes, I do equate it very similarly.
So, I mean, Steph, we just appreciated so much having you on and cutting through a lot of these topics. And yeah, I mean, like Jen just mentioned, I absolutely love when we meet amazing humans and we know that they're going to bring another incredible human into this world and do their darndest to provide them a secure base, you know, to form and develop from. So we're so excited for you and Christine to bring a little human into the world.
Yeah. And your work is truly, truly incredible. I feel like we just tapped on the surface of what we could dive so much deeper into, but we don't want to spend hours of your time. So where could people really find more information, be able to work with you guys to actually start to dive into this?
Yeah, for sure. So thank you for that. So, you know, you can reach out to myself on my website, StephanosSafanos.com, social media at StephanosSafanos. My wife, Christine, ChristineHassler.com, and her social is at Christine Hassler. But we also have an amazing coaching institute that we co-founded, myself, my wife, and another couple, Alexi Panos and Preston Smiles, and that's Elementum Coaching Institute. And we teach coaches how to be really clean, clear vessels of empowerment for other people, and for those that are in the space of coaching, how to really get the best out of their clients by getting the best out of themselves, right? Because I've found in my life that the more successful I become as a coach and as a teacher and a guide, there's a direct correlation to the amount of inner work that I do. Mm-hmm. And so part of the curriculum and being a certified master coach and Elementum master coach and Elementum coach, a part of that is doing your own inner work. And we facilitate the curriculum it's done in such a special way that you're not only learning tangible hard skills and how you can apply that to your clientele, but how you can apply it to yourself, right? Yeah. And the amount of hours that are involved in the 9-month curriculum journey to be a qualified coach are really high as well. So there's just a lot of goodness there. So that's elementumcoachinginstitute.com. And, you know, we've accumulated so much of our 50-plus years of collective knowledge into this program, into this coaching institute, and it's continuing to evolve.
Oh, I'm sure. You guys are truly doing the work. You're leading the way in all of that. And I can say that I have been to one of Christine's workshops, obviously not this one, but, you know, and the amount of respect that I have for you two and in the environments that you create in order for people to heal. It was a huge part of my journey and something I still talk about. If anyone asks me about my journey, I bring up that workshop, and you were there as well and got to experience some of my healing. But I appreciate who you guys are, how you're healing the world, and living this purpose that you're preaching. So thank you for being a walking example of that.
Thank you. Thank you to you both. I deeply, deeply appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, just a real example of the people doing the work themselves. Yeah. And like you said, becoming the best within yourself so that you can then help facilitate that in others. And so, Stefano, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate your time, and hopefully we get to see you soon.
Thank you. Likewise. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Dom. Deeply, deeply appreciate both of you as well.
Such an incredible episode. I really hope you go check out Stefano's Instagram page so that you can understand his work on a deeper level, really helping people connect with self so we can connect better as a world, right? Connect better in relationship. And don't forget, if you're enjoying these podcast episodes, please hit subscribe, leave us a review. It just helps us to be seen by so many more people. And we're going to have some epic guests coming out continuously on this podcast. And if you have recommendations, let us know. Drop into our DMs, email us, drop it into a review. We want to hear from you so we understand and keep giving you the best information here.